One little story from this. In the message. This has to do with a dragonfly. I used to love watching dragonflies when I was a kid, going to the creek and seeing the dragonflies and the crawdads and such. The flight of a dragonfly is a wonder of physics. Most insects have used two wings to fly. However, the dragonfly has four wings that can hover or move both forward or in reverse, either quickly or slowly. Dragonflies have an unusual muscular system that allows the four wings to move independently. This is the key factor for its incredible acrobatics. Physicists are still trying to understand the forces involved in how a dragonfly moves. Isn't that amazing? And bioengineers have been trying to build robotic versions of dragonflies. They haven't succeeded yet. Isn't that amazing? At first, they assumed that the out-of-phase flapping of a dragonfly's wings came with an extra energy usage cost. Upon further study, it was discovered that the hind wings actually use force and momentum from the wake of air sent by the front wings. This reduced the aerodynamic power requirements by up to 22% as compared with a single pair of wings. What is even more amazing is the ability of dragonflies to switch between out-of-phase flapping and in-phase flapping as needed. How did dragonflies get all that? How did that happen? Just by chance? I don't think so. God designed them that way. He designed them to do what they do. And what they do, if you ever watch Dragonfly, they do very, very well. Dragonfly wings are directly connected to large muscles within the thorax. The interior of the thoracic exoskeleton is massively braced and strengthened to withstand the pressure of these large flight muscles. And that happened by chance? I don't think so. I think God designed it that way. Last week I gave you a message on concerning Esau. Today I'm going to contrast that with Jacob. So if you turn to Genesis chapter 28, we're going to look at Genesis chapter 28, verse 1, all the way through chapter 33 of verse 20 of Genesis. And I'm not going to read all of it. I'll highlight it. We all need it. God created us for it, and there's no lasting joy without it. It is one of the major things that people need from us, but the one thing we cannot give until we have received it. When we do not receive it from our parents because it was denied them, that many of us have grown up that way, we will spend the rest of our lives demanding it or trying to earn it from others. And yet, in all honesty, no human being can satisfy our desire for it. What is this I'm talking about? What's that have to do with Jacob? What has that to do with Esau? It's just this. It's the blessing. It's the blessing. See, we just seem to have the ideas when we're reading through the scriptures and we think about blessing, we just have the idea that blessings are just things that you reel off. Just like what Isaac did with Esau and Jacob, what he said, told them, what Jacob told his sons later. Those are blessings. Well, yes and no. The blessing is more than just things. I'm talking about a particular blessing. Each of us needs to be blessed, to feel blessed, and in turn to be a giver of blessing to others. I believe that this word is one of the most misunderstood words in all of language, as well as in the scriptures. Is that a blessing? Many, when you read the scriptures and you read the Sermon on the Mount, many of the translations that it's translated, they say that Jesus begins with, "Happy are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Happy are those who seek after Him. Happy, they translate, instead of blessed. When Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." But what does that mean? Not happy. That's a mistranslation of the word that's used. It literally means, in the Greek, it literally means, as well as in the Hebrew, it literally means the affirmation or approval of someone. But specifically of God. The blessing of God is that we belong to Him, that He is delighted in us, and that He has singled us out for His love. What do you mean by that? To be a blessed person is to know, and yes, we could use that word feel. I don't have any problem with that, but it's more than just feelings. It's to know God's affirmation, His acceptance, and assurance. It is the experience of being chosen, of being cherished, of being valued, and yes, enjoyed. That's why God's message is, the message is for those who need to know His blessing, His affirmation, His approval. But there are so many who find it difficult, to allow God to bless them, to allow God to give them His approval, His affirmation. That's for people such as you and I, and all people. The puzzle of life is this. The puzzle of life is that we often resist what we need and what we really want most of all. Why is this? Well, let's look at the life of Jacob and to discover the answer to that question. And why people who feel unblessed do not receive it. Jacob provides us a profound and shocking look in the mirror of ourselves. Jacob believed he was unblessed. Jacob was very strong-willed, though, too, as well. But he was, and it caused him to be a restless person. And I think he was also insecure. Son of Isaac and Rebekah. If you we look in an in-depth study of Jacob, I think it will help us to identify our own struggles and see what we can do about them and what can be done about them. For we, just like Jacob did, we live, all people, every person, whether or not they want to admit it or not, they live on a collision course with God. What do I mean by that? When our wills collide with God's over who is going to be Lord of our lives. See, that's Tony and I were talking about this a little earlier. See, that's what people get the wrong idea about this thing of accepting Jesus, that Jesus has to accept us. It's the other way around. It's the other way around. Yes, we seek for that blessing, that affirmation, approval from God. But it doesn't just automatically come. There's a struggle involved. That's where the collision comes with Yahweh, with God, for everybody. Because it has to do, again, with His will and our will. Who's going to be the Lord? Who's going to be the Lord of one's life? Who's going to be the Lord over your life? Who do you want to control it and to be Lord? Some people want themselves. Others will look to politicians or others. But that's not where they should be looking. They should be looking to Yahweh. So what brought Jacob to this collision course with Yahweh? Well, we know, as we talked about last week, and we're looking at this contrast between them now, Jacob had a twin brother, Esau. And as you remember from last week's message, Esau was born first. And Jacob then Jacob. That's how Jacob got his name, by the way. By holding on to his brother's heel. Jacob literally means, in the Hebrew, means supplanter, or one who takes by the heel. Or what he was known as, his heel catcher. That's what Jacob literally means. One who is a heel catcher. So when they were born, see, Esau did. Esau came out first, and Jacob was holding on to his heel. They're twins, though. Jeff and I, as twins, we can understand this, and often it's just something I do, that I have to remind my nieces, specifically my nieces, that I was born first. My sister came 38 minutes later. And would say, no, you're the youngest. I said, no, I'm not the youngest. My sister is the youngest. She was born 38 minutes after me. So I'm older than her. So we don't know how that this seems, though, like it was, you know, as soon as Esau came out, so did Jacob. And Jacob was hanging on to his heel. But what we notice here, that after the boys, after they were born, and after they're growing up, Mom and Dad, Isaac and Rebekah, they chose favorites. Scriptures tell us that. You read Genesis in chapter 27, it tells us that. They chose favorites. And they didn't make any bones about it. They knew. Those boys knew. Esau was his father's favorite son. Because Esau was a man of the field. He was a hunter. And he had Isaac's blessing. In other words, he had Isaac's affirmation. He had Isaac's approval. Jacob, however, was Rachel's favorite son. Jacob was a man, a peaceful man. He was a peaceful boy. He became a peaceful man. He lived in tents. But not only he lived in tents, he liked to cook, too. He wasn't a hunter of the field. He didn't go out in the fields and that. He liked to cook. He was mama's boy. He was her favorite son. And they made no bones about it either. But what you see in the scriptures is there was a sibling rivalry there that was rooted in a battle of wills. But it was not only rooted in the battle of wills in Jacob, in Esau and Jacob, the contrast, if you see that, but there was also a battle of wills between Isaac and Rebekah. There was a competition there for dominance. We can see that in the scriptures. How do we know that? Because of what the scriptures tell us is there was one parent's preference for one child above another. And that is usually rooted, I believe, in a very unstable marriage. Which brings us to the birthright then. The firstborn was given, what the birthright meant was this, that the firstborn was given the right to assume the father's place, the father's property, and authority as ruling member of the family upon the father's death. That's the birthright. That's what it meant. Isaac had every intention of giving that to Esau. It didn't matter what Esau did with that birthright. And when it comes down to it, it's what Isaac did with it. It's also of spiritual importance, the birthright was. Because it was a father's affirmation or approval of his blessing to his children. It was his gift of affirmation. It, his seal of the father's love. But it also gave each child a sense of identity and significance throughout life. And here's Jacob growing up. Now Jacob is—he's about in his 20s when Esau comes in, he's famished, you know, and all hungry and that. And Jacob says, "Okay, you want some of that lentil stew? I'll give it to you. You give me your birthright. You give me the birthright. You sell it to me for this stew." And Esau says, "What is that to me?" You see what he thought about his birthright then. But Jacob knew what that meant. And so Esau did do that. But see, what Jacob was searching for from his father was that sense of identity and significance. Jacob knew the significance of what that birthright meant. You can imagine what was going through his mind. Well, if I had the birthright, and it's now mine, then my father is going to treat me differently. My father is going to give me the affirmation and approval that I want, because I now have the birthright. So the blessing is going to be mine. And not Esau's. I think that's what the way that Jacob was thinking. See, what Jacob didn't receive, he wrestled with for most of his life. Now, Rebecca, his mother, she not only wanted Jacob to be blessed, but she wanted Jacob to receive the birthright. How do we know that? Because she herself, Rebecca, plotted with Jacob. She plotted to get not only the birthright, but Jacob's blessing. His final blessing, which would give him that birthright. But Esau, he didn't think about that. In fact, he could really care less about it. So thus we see in Genesis chapter 27, Jacob and Rachel's deception. In Genesis chapter 27, verse 4, Isaac is old now. His eyes are too dim to see. And he called his brother Esau and said to him, "My son," he said to him, "here I am." Isaac said, "Behold now, I am old and I do not know the day of my death. Now then, please take your gear, your quiver, and your bow, and you go out in the field and you hunt game for me." You think Rebecca didn't know what Isaac was about to do? Yes, she did. She most certainly did. Because he said, "And prepare a savory dish for me, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, so that my soul may bless you before I die." And Rebecca was listening to all this. So when Esau went out, Rebecca called Jacob in. Said, "My son, this is now what I want you to do. Go prepare a kid for me. Go prepare the meat for me." It's what she tells him. "Behold," now notice what Rebecca said to her son Jacob. "Behold, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, saying, 'Bring me some game and prepare a savory dish for me, that I may eat and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death.'" And this is what she says. "Now therefore, my son, listen to me as I command you." Listen to me as I command you. You do what I say. "You go now to the flock, bring me two choice young goats from there, and I'll prepare them as a savory dish from your father, such as he loved. Then you bring it to your father, that he may eat, so that he may bless you before his death." Now notice how Jacob answers his mother. "Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, then I will be as a deceiver in his sight, and I will bring upon myself a curse and not a blessing." But his mother said to him, "Your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go, and you get them from me." And then Rebekah took some of the best garments of Esau, her elder son, and she put them on Jacob. They planned this all together. Jacob knew what was going on. He could have told his mother, "No, Mom, this isn't right. It's not right to do this." But he didn't do that. He just said, "Well, you know, how are we going to get beyond this? how are we going to deceive my father?" In essence, that's what he's asking. And Rebecca tells him, "This is how we're going to do it." And Jacob went along with it. The deception works. That's what we learn in Genesis chapter 27, verses 28 and 29. And Jacob does give him the blessing, his final blessing, his affirmation. Now may God give you of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and abundance of grain and new wine. Many may people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master of your brothers and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be those who curse you and blessed be those who bless you. May they find approval and affirmation from you, what Isaac was saying. And he said that to Jacob. All the while he's thinking it's Esau. And it's not till later that Esau comes in. And Esau sees that the blessing has been taken away from him. So what happens now? As we learn in verses 39 and 40 of chapter 27, you see Esau's anger and rejection. Look what Esau says to Isaac. Esau said to his father, verse 38, "Do you have only one blessing, my father? You have only one affirmation? Bless me, affirm me too. Even me also, my father." So Esau lifted up his voice and wept. It now meant something to him. Then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fertility of the earth shall be your dwelling, and away from the dew of heaven from above. But by your sword you shall live, and your brother you shall serve, and it shall come about when you become restless that you will break his yoke from your neck." And look at verse 41, what this caused. Esau now hates his brother, and he plots to kill him. So Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near, and then I will kill my brother Jacob." But somehow that word must have, his thinking must have gotten out. Don't know how. But it must have, because in verse 42 it tells us, "Now when the words of her elder son Esau were reported to Rebekah, she sent and called her younger son Jacob and said to him, 'Behold, your brother Esau is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you.'" She said, "Now therefore, my son, obey my voice and arise, and you flee to Haran, to my brother Laban. You stay with him a few days until your brother's fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides, and he forgets what you did to him." Notice what she says, what you did to him. Well, it wasn't just what Jacob did to him. It was also what his mother did to him. Because his mother planned the deception. "Then I will send and get you from there. Why should I be bereaved of you both in one day?" Because she knew if that had happened, Esau would be gone too. And then Rebekah says to Isaac, "I'm tired of living because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Heth, like these from the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me?" Because that's what Esau had done. Taking daughters of Hittites, daughters of Heth. And that displeased her. So Jacob is sent away. Imagine how Jacob felt. He's still unblessed. Even though his father had given a blessing, he knows it was not rightfully his. He knows they deceived his father to get it. Thus, indeed, it was a stolen blessing. A stolen blessing after all. Do you really think that satisfied his desire for his father's love and affirmation? I don't think so. So like any love that is forced upon another, which is that's what it was, it leaves both the taker and the taken empty. But Jacob does do as his mother asks. He leaves and flees and goes to Laban. So as a result, Jacob It was very cunning, a very manipulative individual. He took charge. He became self-reliant. I think Jacob thought, well, if anything's going to be done, I must do it myself. That's why he took the birthright from Esau. What we call the Jacob syndrome. People of all generations have suffered with it in one form or another. That, I find that obvious in a lot of people that you meet throughout life. You know those people that you meet with, that they seem like they have a chip on their shoulder? That's the reason. I really believe that that's the reason. That's why you see some people and some guys specifically, you know, they got to prove how macho they are. That's why. What I call the Jacob syndrome. Now, it's true, I believe, it's hidden in others, but it's manifested in subtle ways. Sometimes, in an unguarded moment, an outwardly self-confident and self-assured person will say how they were denied affirmation in their childhood, acceptance in their childhood, approval from either mom or dad, and how they were rejected by others in growing up. And we see that happening in our society today. We see that happening with young people. And what happens is it results in a lifelong struggle for approval and for affirmation. And they wander through life. And that's what Jacob began to do. Contrast that with Esau. Esau didn't, though. Esau could have had less. But Jacob cared. But they wander through life looking for some surrogate, for either a surrogate mother, father, older brother or sister, or some authority figure in their life to tell them, finally, you're okay. You're affirmed. I affirm you. They go throughout life looking for that. And many never find it. That's why it is so important, brothers and sisters, that's why it is so important to tell, not only show, but to tell our children that we love them. I think many of the problems that we see in young people today is a lack of that, that they haven't had that. But it's not just enough to show, we need to tell them. Son, I love you. And then when we do that, you know, I think that it becomes easier then for our children to tell us as mom and dad, Mom, I love you. Dad, I love you. But if they don't hear it themselves, they're not likely to get that. And they'll look for other places to try to get that. And ultimately, they won't receive it. You see, God, Yahweh, knew that Jacob was looking for that the most. And he knew that ultimately, that Jacob was looking for his blessing, his affirmation, his approval. How do we know that? Look at Genesis chapter 28, verses 13 and 15. Jacob is now on his way to Paddan Aram, which would be found in an area of Iraq today, to his uncle Laban. And notice what happens in Genesis 28, verses 13 to 15. But Jacob had a dream. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac. The land in which you lie, I will give it to you and to your descendants. Your descendants will also be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And then Jacob wakes up. The message was clear. God's presence and God's splendor came to Jacob, and he was lifted up into God's presence. That's what it tells us about the dream. But it's what Jacob needed. Yahweh is giving Jacob what he needed. Look at his reaction when he awoke in verses 16 and 17. Jacob's afraid. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord, Yahweh, is in this place, and I did not know it." He was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." See, Jacob did not expect to meet Yahweh. He did not expect to meet the Lord. And that's why he was moved by his dream, as we read later there. He was moved by his dream to call the place where he that had his dream to call it Bethel, meaning house of God. And that's the site where Bethlehem arose, was there. And we notice here that Jacob then, he made a vow to God. He made a vow to Yahweh. And that meant that Jacob had his first stirring of knowing what it is to be blessed by God. So now he comes to his uncle's place. His uncle, as we read about earlier, his uncle Laban, Rebekah's brother, he was really a rogue of rogues. He was some guy, Laban was. In Genesis chapter 29, verse 20, we see the family trait here. Or Laban's treachery in verse 21. Remember what happened here? It's that Jacob sees Rachel and he goes to Laban, said, "You know, give me Rachel for my wife." Then Laban says, "Sure, fine." And this is what Jacob told him. "I'll serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." And Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man, so you stay with me for 7 years." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. He's not close to 40 by now. He served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. And then you read on, you see what Laban did. 7 years now is up. Now look what happens. Now, I believe that Jacob must have been drunk from that feast that they had. Because he didn't know it wasn't Rachel that he was married to. He had become married to. Because when he woke up, it wasn't Rachel. It was Leah. And see how Laban is a rogue of rogues. And Jacob becomes enraged. Because what it tells in verse 21 is that his time, my 7 years is up. Give me my wife. In the verse 25, we see how he's angry. But what Laban says to him, "It's not the practice in our place to marry off the young before the firstborn." So Laban tells him, "You complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also for the service, which you will serve with me for another 7 years." So you serve with me another 7 years, but you complete this week, for Leah. You complete this week, then I'll give you Rachel. So you can have Rachel too. But then, after once that is done, then you agree to serve me another 7 years. 14 years. So he works another week and 7 more years to keep her, and 6 more beyond that, even. From what we learned in the text. And Rachel and Leah have a continued battle over Jacob's affections. Leah has children first. Rachel doesn't have any. So Rachel says, here, I'll give you my maid. Yeah, you have children through her for me. So that's what happens. And then Leah quits conceiving, and she said, okay, I have a maid, handmaid, so now you take her as your mistress, and you have more kids by her. And then maybe I'll finally be loved by Jacob. And we see how that worked out. And then Laban says, okay, if you'll serve me another 6 years, then you can go. But you know, you're a good shepherd, and you take care of my flocks and that. Until you serve me another 6 years, you know, and I'll give you your wages. And we see about what happened with the sheep and the goats. And notice what Jacob does. He gives God the glory. We see all through this that the Lord is with Jacob. And so finally, Jacob said he's had enough. He gathers all his children together, Rachel and Leah, the two mistresses, the handmaids, said, we're leaving. And that's what they proceed to do. So finally, Jacob leaves Laban and returns to his homeland. But what the message in all of this is, what we see is from this is that God was preparing Jacob for an encounter. He was preparing Jacob for an encounter with himself. And we see that when you look at Genesis chapter 32. After Jacob has left, what we see here is Jacob's will versus God's will. And I firmly believe if Jacob had not endured the trials and difficulties he went through, he would not have been ready for what God had prepared him for. He was spiritually transformed. That's what we see here. Remember what his fear of Esau? He still has a fear of Esau. And we see that in the beginning of the chapter, in chapter 32. But notice in verse 24 what happens. See, Jacob stays on this side of the Yabbok River. But he sent the others across the stream. Verse 24. Then Jacob was left alone, and man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh, so the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. And then he said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him and said, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? He didn't tell him. It just says, and he blessed him there. So Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved. What's this all about? And we see the contrast here between Jacob and Esau. Esau, as we're going to learn next week, Esau was never spiritually transformed. He didn't seek it. Jacob, on the other hand, was spiritually transformed at that time. Now, that spiritual transformation was slow in Jacob and happening, but it did happen at that moment. When God changed his name from heel catcher, from Jacob, to Israel. Genesis chapter 32, verses 19 and 20 tells us that very thing. There's it again, see, acceptance. He still was looking for acceptance from his brother now, from Esau, what we see. But what he really needed was acceptance from Yahweh. That's why he wrestled with Yahweh. That's why he wrestled with him. See, he didn't realize that only God can give acceptance, true affirmation. But he came to see that. God showed him that. See, he was wrestling with Yahweh. Now, we could think of that literally, but there's also a spiritual aspect to that. So we think, what is it like to wrestle with God? People may think that they're not wrestling with God, but they are. Because it's a struggle about who is going to be in control of one's life. That's wrestling with God. You see, the Lord wants us to be willing. He's fine with us wrestling with Him. But He wants us to be willing to seek and to do His will. That's why Jacob named that place the face of God. Because he had wrestled with Him. And yes, had prevailed. Because it says Jacob would not let the Lord go until he had blessed him. So that's why the Lord gives him a new name. Israel means Yahweh strives. Now, did Jacob do anything? Did he really do anything to deserve that? I don't think so. However, Jacob became willing to be molded by Yahweh. And he was. You see, after this, when we look at in Genesis chapter 33, verse 10, we see this. What he says to his brother now. Jacob said, "No, please, if now I have found favor in your sight, then take my present from my hand, for I see your face as one sees the face of God, and you have received me favorably." What we see now in Jacob is not the cunning and the deceptiveness, the manipulation, but what we see in Jacob now is compassion and his gentleness. He's now open, not only to his brother and to his family, but he's open to Yahweh. He didn't have to work at being loved anymore. He knew he was. He knew that he was blessed now. Why? Because he received the ultimate blessing of all, God's affirmation. God's approval for what Yahweh had told him. So what does that mean to you and me? What does that mean to others? It means this. People can go throughout life. We can go throughout life, all of our efforts to earn and receive blessings from others. And go out and go throughout life seeking for that. But realize that will never fill the emptiness that is in us. We cannot receive it from others. It is only God's affirmation that can. And that's why, just as he gave Jacob a new name, when we become one of his, when we are owned by Christ, he gives us a new name. And it's only then, I truly believe, that it's only when we realize that that we can actually become an affirmer to others. When we understand that he's given us a new name, we're going to stand and we're going to sing, a new name in glory. See, all of us as Christians, he's given us a new name. But part of that, and I believe that new name, it entails the fact that we find approval and affirmation in the Lord. People don't realize that, but they do need to. But thanks be to him, those of us that are in him, we know he has given us a new name, and that we do have a new name in glory.